You're listening to The Pulse.
Hey, Wynn Army Community Hospital and Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield. It's Kevin Larson coming at you with another episode of The Pulse, the podcast that keeps our staff and beneficiaries in the know about what's happening here at the hospital and across our footprint. Today, I'm joined by Lieutenant Colonel Samantha Bazan, the Deputy Commander for Quality and Safety here at the hospital. We're going to talk about this important section that works behind the scenes for ensuring patient safety and quality care. Ma'am, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, first, tell me a little bit about yourself. What's your background and how did you get started in military medicine?
So I've been in the Army for about 20 years. I came in the Army as an Army Nurse Corps officer, and I've done a lot of jobs within nursing, but ultimately I went to nurse practitioner school. And so that is what my trade is right now.
So nurse practitioner, essentially you are all the things that a doctor can do without actually being a doctor. You can prescribe drugs, you can see patients, you can do all the things. I mean, where are the boundaries?
So that's a very interesting question. There's a lot of different answers that you're going to get about this. Essentially, from a patient perspective, you're going to get the same level of care no matter who you see. There are very few things, especially in family practice, which is where I'm at for a specialty, that we can't do that, you know, a physician or an MD, somebody you think about typically as a doctor, can do. So it's really from my perspective there. I mean, there are differences, but from the patient perspective, you're not really going to ever feel that difference.
You're getting quality care no matter what, no matter what the degree, the title, quality care is the goal.
Yeah, exactly.
So the quality and safety section here at Wynn Army Community Hospital, can you tell me a little bit about your role with them and what the department's goals are and how they ensure patient safety and quality care?
So the quality and safety lane at any military hospital, it's really a unique unique section within the hospital. So you're right. A lot of the things that they do, as you alluded to earlier, are behind the scenes. But it's unique also in the fact that we have program managers within the quality and safety lane, but quality and safety really touches every single thing that we do within the hospital. So even when it's not apparent from looking outside in, really any of these programs are really just intertwined with every single other committee, initiative. I mean, everything that we do, we want to make sure that we're delivering, you know, again, like it's kind of a buzzword, but quality and safe healthcare.
So you're touching on it a little bit, that collaboration. How does the quality and safety lane collaborate with the other departments here and the other lanes at the hospital to achieve, you know, that quality care and safety?
So again, the different sections within quality and safety, anytime that they do an initiative or that there's a governing, you know, system or body or process, much like everywhere else in the hospital, honestly, it's usually multidisciplinary. Mm-hmm. And so what the quality and safety lane does in particular is make sure that we have all the right members of any process at that table so that there is collaboration and buy-in and checks and balances across lots of different areas before we, you know, push out something or make any final decisions on how we're gonna you know, make something function here in the hospital.
Got it. So like some of those disciplines in quality and safety, like infection control or patient safety or safety, things like that, like some new surgical procedure could be coming online here, let's say hypothetically, and infection control might need a seat at the table, possibly something like that.
Yeah. So, and you gave a great example, infection control, you know, if we had a new piece of equipment, they would certainly be one of many entities that would ensure that they had a process in inspecting it, and, you know, doing trial runs and things like that before it ever went live. And what you'll find is within quality and safety, again, other areas too, but they will have, you know, infection control. They'll have usually the compliance officer, which also falls in our lane. Just multiple entities that will take a look from a different lens that all comes together for one complete picture in the end, though.
Right. And then also I spoke to her in one of my earlier podcasts. The patient advocate falls under quality and safety as well. So that advocate, that ear of the patients, the beneficiaries, falls into your lane as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So she's the patient advocate, the whole idea behind that is to create, just another avenue or a tool that patients can use, to get what they need to get, communication or something resolved or, and it's not the only way, but it is one way.
Right. And how does the lane stay up to date on changes and advancements in healthcare safety and quality?
So really, the key word for all of this is really just continuous collaboration. So we do that up, down, across lanes, outside of our organization. We'll talk a little bit further about accreditation and what that means for a hospital, I'm sure. But it's just constant, really surveillance or receiving and collaborating with information across several different key players, if you think about it like that.
That makes sense. So specifically here at WIN, are there any patient safety campaigns or awareness initiatives that quality and safety is undertaking right now?
So because quality and safety touches everything, there's always something, some initiative that's going on. A lot of these are driven, by the Defense Health Agency, Joint Commission, other safety bodies or governing entities for the hospital. But in particular for WIN, I think one thing to highlight that we're constantly trying to improve on, right, trying to learn, is our new electronic medical record. Mm-hmm. And so really, the key is we have all the technology now at our fingertips. We just have to figure out how to optimize it, both as a local MTF, a military treatment facility, and really just as a large organization. And so we've really made some strides in the last 2 years, which is when we, first went live with it. We're really starting to figure out some of the things that system can do, and we're trying to turn that into a positive thing, both for us and our patients, despite some of the hiccups early on.
Right. I mean, it's supposed to be the be-all, end-all of medical healthcare records, and technology is great and all, but if it's got issues, then, people like you, people that work in your lane, clearly they play a large role in ensuring that both patients and providers are both making optimal use of the system and ensuring that there aren't any hiccups along the way, I guess you could say, right?
Yeah, and really just finding out how those pieces play into each other and how they work. So there's a lot of benefit from that electronic medical record that really I think what we'll find is despite the growing pains, I think in the next couple of years we'll really find that it's actually a benefit to us and not something that's such a struggle.
Yeah, I mean, especially in the military community where people, PCS, there's changings. It would make sense to have a system like we have now that encapsulates all your data for you, your dependents, and you just move and there it is. I remember from my dependent days, it was a paper file that you went when you out-processed and you put it into your carry-on bag and you took it with on the plane when you flew across the ocean and when you checked in at your next medical care at the dispensary, whatever, you handed off your record. And My record may have ended up here at WIN somewhere, hard copy, but I don't know. seriously, though, to get back on topic, how does quality and safety keep patients and families and also the staff informed on what you guys are doing?
So one of the biggest feedback mechanisms, I guess, for us as a hospital is something called the, you know, the accreditation by the Joint Commission. Mm-hmm. That's really, it's the gold standard for measuring quality-based care and really just standards-based care, right? And so, and that's across, it's nationwide, it's across the entire, you know, U.S. But really for us, you know, us doing well on that survey really is feedback to the community that we're doing, you know, the right things as far as quality and safety. And our last inspection was last year. And so we're coming up in that window again, but we did very well on that survey. And so really that's a great feedback from or to the community that we're on the right track with all the standards that they put forward.
And we'll talk more about that after we come back from a short break, the importance of the Joint Commission and the accreditation here at Wynn Army Community Hospital.
Introducing Q Anywhere, your stress-free prescription pickup solution. Just get in line with your DoD ID, select your pharmacy spot, and we'll text you when your prescription is ready. Text I am here when you're on your way, and we'll have your meds ready for pickup. Quick, efficient, and easy. For refills, call 912-435-6576. Q Anywhere, because life's too short to wait.
And we're back. I'm joined by Lieutenant Colonel Samantha Bazan, and we're talking about the role quality and safety plays here at Wynn Army Community Hospital. And just before the break, you were talking about the importance of Joint Commission, and we'll get into that a little bit in a second here, but I wanted to kind of backtrack and ask about if there is a safety concern that a patient or someone who visits the hospital, anyone that comes onto our campus, if there's something they see or something that happens to them that they want to report, how do they do that? And who's obligated to report? I mean, staff has to too, I'm sure, right? So who can report, who should report? What are some mechanisms for doing that?
So when I think of who needs to report a safety incident or a safety concern, I almost think globally about how, you know, they train you in the Army, right? See something, say something. So really anybody can report something. If you are in the hospital, honestly, you can find anybody with a badge. You can go by staff duty. You can always come find, you know, one of the leaders in the hospital. It really doesn't matter. Just say something to someone so that we can get the right folks involved. If you're a patient and you have a concern about your individual health care, again, we talked about the patient advocate is one avenue. You can certainly still do the same thing. You can always, you know, reach out to one of us. But also you can put in ICE comments, both positive and, you know, ones that are, you know, for room for improvement. We like to hear that we're doing good things too. But there's lots of different ways that folks can reach out. But really, if there is a safety concern, we do want to know, because like I said earlier, quality and safety is at the cornerstone of every single thing we do. And we don't shy away from pointing those things out. We want to know so that we can fix it and make it better, so it's not a concern.
And that gets back to what you were touching on before the break and what I alluded to before we went to the break, Joint Commission and the importance of being accredited. So they come, they visit the hospital, and they look over all of our processes. They look at what we're doing. They inspect and audit everything. And then they make recommendations for change. So why does being accredited matter so much to the organization, and what is the goal of accreditation?
So for the first part of that, why does the accreditation matter? Again, it's really just thought about nationally as the gold standard, right? And so that is the benchmark that is accepted, you know, widespread as the way that you measure whether or not you're meeting the benchmarks that are nationally set to ensure that you know that people are going to receive good care at your hospital. It's a really cumbersome process, so I don't know if if folks can really wrap their brains around that. But, you know, you're talking at least a week on ground of inspections of all different kinds of areas of the hospital from, again, multidisciplinary teams. And then they essentially give us a grade on how we did. And it's not like a letter grade, though, right? Like, they're looking for very specific things, and they're not all weighted the same. And so if we do poorly, they will point those out very quickly. But like I said, we did very well. And so sometimes what you'll get is just recommendations to make things better. And so we have, again, a whole team then that works in the background to, you know, potentially look at how do we make those things better that maybe were pointed out that aren't really, you know, huge risks, but just constantly striving to figure out how do we do better. And so we did that after the last one. And so we'll, you know, we'll go through it again the next inspection.
So it's a continuous improvement model, essentially, where they're not necessarily looking to fail the hospital, clearly, because that would be serious. They're looking just to see if we're doing what we need to be doing, if we're in compliance, and then the major things are pointed out quickly, and then the minor things are just recommendations. But like you said, we did very well, and I can tell you, I did go to the Joint Commission website. I did look up Wynn Army Community Hospital, and there is the accredited, and that is all they put on their website. They don't actually, I dug down, and they do not actually release reports on the specifics. Those are just provided to the hospital for that improvement. But the accreditation, that's enough to have that on the website saying, Wynn Army Community Hospital, you're accredited. That is that gold standard that you're referring to. And it's my understanding that basically Joint Commission, they can show up anytime in that window, right? They can basically just drop in unannounced, and you need to be ready every day for Joint Commission to show up. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's an accreditation window, which is typically 3 years after, you know, within 3 years of after your last inspection. But the truth is, Joint Commission can show up at any time. And so you're always trying to be ready for this. Readiness is not a new term that anybody, most people that have been around a military community have heard that term at least once. But that's really when we think about from a hospital readiness standpoint, that's really what we try to do all the time, is make sure that we're constantly meeting those benchmarks, not just when we think Joint Commission's going to show up.
Right, and there's actually a process every morning. There's a phone call where all of the lanes report any upcoming or any safety concerns that happened, just to keep that at the forefront of why it matters.
Yeah, that's just one internal process that we have daily, though, right? And the whole idea is to create an avenue for people to bring up safety concerns very early, so that we can get reconciliation quickly, so it doesn't become a bigger issue. Just because something's brought up doesn't mean it's catastrophic or anything like that, right? It's just our early warning sign to say, hey, we need to fix, you know, whatever it is, and it just allows all the players to get in on that early so that we can put action to it.
Right, and if Joint Commission were to show up that day, let's say, hypothetically, a door to some critical facility is broken, so long as the process is in place, the steps are being taken to rectify that, Joint Commission shows up and says, hey, your doors are broken, you can say, yeah, we know, and we're fixing it. Joint Commission would be understanding, of course, right?
Yeah, and that's one of the unique things, I think, maybe about hospitals in general, is we're not trying to hide those. We bring early attention to it. We don't try to cover it up or anything like that, right? The process is for them to know that, yes, we identify things early, and then we very quickly try to reconcile those so that it doesn't become a long-term issue. So, you know, you alluded to earlier that Joint Commission doesn't try to fail anybody. No, they don't. I don't think they set out to try and fail anybody, but they will. And there have been hospitals that have failed. So it's not that you just get a passing grade. So that's part of a high reliable organization, right, is being transparent. And so that's our transparent process of early identification. We're not trying to cover it up. We just we're putting action to it. And so that's what we would do. If they came and they saw that door, we would say, yep, hey, we put the work order in and we're getting it fixed.
Perfect. That's exactly, and thank you for clarifying my point earlier about the Joint Commission and being transparent with them, and that, you know, there are hospitals that have failed in the past, but that is why this organization exists, to ensure patient safety and quality care. So for the listeners out there, you know, this is a difficult topic for them to wrap their head around, because, you know, they just come to the hospital, they get care, and they leave, and they don't necessarily know about all the things that go on behind the scenes. But how can they contribute to our mission here, to our commitment for patient safety? What can our beneficiaries do?
So one of the, again, this is, there's kind of lots of answers to these, but one that I'd really like to highlight is we actually have a patient council where members of the community can be on this council, and it's a way for them to, you know, advocate for what they want to see in their healthcare, for ways for them to get feedback, and, you know, to bring up concerns, to, you know, kind of garner, you know, attention and support, like, from the community, right, as a collaborative effort with us. So we do have that. And then, you know, they can also use the same, some of the similar avenues that we talked about earlier. They can always put in ICE comments, you know, and really, again, just everybody's kind of a safety officer, right? And so if you see something unsafe, whether it's about the facility or whether it's about your, you know, healthcare that you receive, you know, you can always raise those issues, right? Because we do want to hear the feedback. Again, with the idea that we're going to identify, you know, problems early if we need to, and then fix them. So.
And then what can staff do to help out quality and safety?
Yeah, so for staff, this definitely applies. Like, everybody's a safety officer. So that's pretty well known. We have the safety call in the morning. We ask people to readily pass that information up through their chain so that it does get reported there. We kind of have open door policies all over the place for our staff here. So, you know, we build an atmosphere where anybody really can raise those issues without, you know, fear of repercussion and things like that. So, and then again, just adhering to the safety standards and the policies and procedures that we have, because they are geared toward ensuring quality and safety care.
Yeah, the policies exist for a reason. So, you know, when someone says to do something safe the right way, there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
So, last question. Is there anything about quality and safety, any common misconceptions that you'd want to clear up, or anything that, you know, is weighing heavy on your mind in the quality and safety lane that you want to get off your chest?
You know, so I presume that this is a misconception for at least some people. But sort of the thought process that things in quality and safety are reactive, and so that, you know, for example, we've talked about a lot of ways that people can raise, you know, quality and safety concerns or issues. But the reality is almost probably 80% of what that entire lane really does is proactive. And so we're involved in a lot of processes up front that I don't think are always apparent, to our staff, to other folks. But really, they're always working in the background, sort of behind the scenes, doing a lot of proactive work so that we can really, so that we don't have to fix things, so that they're just good coming out of the box. I'm not sure if it's really a misconception, but I don't think people realize how much proactivity goes on instead of, I think, what kind of what we see, which is reaction.
Wow, that is, I mean, I've only been here a couple months, so everything is a new learning experience for me coming to the hospital, but that is absolutely fascinating to understand that, you know, 10% of what they're doing is just reacting, but there's a lot of heavy lifting going on behind the scenes to prevent and to, I guess, grease the skids of military medicine to ensure that the machine is running smoothly and that, like you said, there are no problems and they're good coming out of the box. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add before we close it out?
So one of the things that I will say, because I think it's, you know, really important. We've talked about, you know, health and safety, quality care. So, you know, a lot of times we get asked, you know, if I'm a patient, or, you know, a family member, like how can we participate in our healthcare? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I think is important is you always got to remember you're your own best advocate. And if something, it's kind of along the lines of the see something, say something, right? If something doesn't feel right or you have a question, don't be afraid to ask, right? And as a healthcare provider, right, as somebody who sees patients, I always want the people I'm seeing or giving care to feel comfortable with whatever plan we've got, and I certainly don't want it to be a one-way street. So just be okay with advocating for yourself, asking questions. It's never wrong to do that.
I can say from my own personal experience, I actively participate in my own healthcare. I tell my nurse practitioner, I tell my doctor when I have concerns about something that they're saying or doing that, you know, hey, maybe this isn't working out or can we consider this? So yeah, ultimately they are the professional and they have the knowledge and the skills to provide that quality care. But yes, I fully endorse being an active part of your own healthcare and being that advocate for yourself, because who else knows you best but yourself? So ma'am, it was an absolute delight to have you on this episode of The Pulse. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And folks, that's about it for this episode. And we will see you on another episode soon. And this is Kevin signing off, and I'll catch you on the flip side.